Hello and welcome to the S-Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture subjects beginning with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I'm...
Owen Fong.
Yeah, today I'm Owen Fong. Thank you.
I'm Sung Lee.
I'm Alex Lau.
And I'm Michael Lee.
All right, so we got five people here around four mics, so let's hope everything goes out well. Anyways, this week's topic being Star Trek, and the usual question we like to ask ourselves: what was the first time you were introduced to Star Trek, Mr. Fong?
My first introduction to Star Trek was when I was young, and when it was The Next Generation on the air. Although, you know, whenever I got to stay up a little bit later, I would be able to watch some of the original series in reruns on syndication. And that was always fun. And yeah, I mean, I just became a fan out of that stuff. No like family or anything like that. No introduction to it. No movies or anything. Just watching TV.
My first introduction was actually before Next Generation ever started. Actually, when was the original series? When did that air?
In the 60s?
In the 60s.
Okay. 60s. Well, the original series has been on reruns all my life.
Pretty much.
And yeah, so like, I catch an episode here and there. I don't even know which episode I saw first. There's no way for me to know for sure. But I did see a lot of the original movies in theaters.
Yeah, that was my introduction as well. Watching the original series on syndication reruns. They actually ran them in order on a local UHF station here. So I watched them in order, although not starting with the first one.
I first watched Star Trek, again, the original series in syndication like these two guys. And the main thing is, I don't remember the exact episodes. I just definitely remember the theme song, the Alexander Courage theme with the vocals provided by Lulie Jean Norman. And I'm a Disney geek. She also provided the soprano part of Grim Grinning Ghosts, the song that plays at Disneyland's Haunted Mansion.
Thanks, Mike.
Yes, you're welcome. But really and truly, I got into Trek with The Next Generation from the very beginning with Encounter at Farpoint. And as a voice acting geek, Groppler Zorn was played by Michael Bell, who provided the voice of my favorite Generation 1 Transformer, Prowl.
Thanks, Mike.
Lance and Sven on Voltron.
Thanks, Mike.
Fine. Back to Star Trek.
Okay. My first experience with Star Trek was actually the sixth movie, The Undiscovered Country. My mother had rented it from the movie store, and she was watching it, and I just happened to catch it while I was a kid. I didn't really understand much about it, but that is what I remember as the first time I've seen any Star Trek. My mom actually used to watch a lot of the original series when she was in college over here. Well, not college, but like graduate school over here. So I think actually she still has seen more of the original series than I have. I've barely seen any of the original series. I know. Everyone get out there, paddle right now. Okay.
You mean I put it away?
Yours is so small, it's hard to notice all the time. Okay, let's go right into television series. I mean, a lot of people know Star Trek as television series more than they know as movies. Although there's that usual idea that if you ask somebody about Star Trek and they think about the movies first, then you know they're not really that into Star Trek. Anyways, TV series. Take it away, guys. I am not really the biggest Trekker. You know that because I know a lot of Star Wars.
Although you're knowledgeable enough that you actually called it Trekker instead of Trekkie.
Dude, I know that at
I know.
Least. Dude, I'm not
saying.
Like out of the geek circle until we start talking about Shakespeare.
Shakespeare's not geeky.
Okay.
You can be a Shakespeare geek.
That's true, yeah. Though. That is true.
Like General Chang is a Shakespeare geek.
Yes.
Indeed he is. Because thanks. Shakespeare is Klingon.
You never heard Shakespeare until you hear it in the original Klingon.
Or, you know, as Chekhov would say, he's actually Russian.
So take it away, guys. I know you guys have a lot to say about the different TV series as well.
So about the original series, I actually spent some time studying that, where it was one of the first real attempts at science fiction, not pulp. Like, it was one of the first things that actually got out of the pulp era.
Right. It actually tried to use some science in there.
Yeah.
Not just, you know,
not just laser beams and Flash Gordon and, you know, I don't even know what Flash Gordon had. He had a space bike, didn't he? Anyway. But yeah, they actually tried to, you know, have some internally consistent science to it. Even though, you know, they made up the whole warp thing to make it so that, you know, you didn't have to have an entire cast every time they got to a new planet. But anyway, but there's actually a lot of really solid science fiction stuff in the original series. Like, there's a lot of very serious study of the original episodes that's out there if you look for it. And especially they talk about things like the Menagerie episode, where, you know, it's talking about subjective realities and things like that. Or, like, I actually was able to track down some Star Trek short stories that were published back in the day, where, you know, they talked about how, like, silicon in theory could, because it's similar chemically, or sorry, molecularly to oxygen, it could be, you know, life. Things
carbon,
like that.
You mean carbon.
Carbon, thank you.
I just remember how the original series influenced a lot of technology that we know of today.
Yeah.
Like communicators, yeah. Like automatic door opening things, sliding doors.
Yeah.
That all came from Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we have an entire generation that, like it or not, grew up on Star Trek, and a lot of people don't even know it.
Yeah. I mean, the iPhone is basically the tricorder. It does everything. You hold it up. I'm holding my iPhone up to Mike right now and taking his readings.
And in those Star Wars movies that don't exist, they took a women's razor, and that was a communicator. Big differences there.
Could we not talk about the movies that didn't exist?
Norelco razor.
In which case, the movies that don't exist are all of the Odd Number ones and all of the Next Generation ones except for First Contact.
The rule is Odd Numbers ones and ones that are multiples of 5.
So that's how they get the exception for 10?
Yes.
That's really specific.
Yeah.
It's just 2 rules. It used to be just 1.
Yeah, and then 10 messed it up.
There are more rules governing leap years than the Star Trek movie.
So anyway, back to this original series, at least. I mean, something that I like having pointed out to me, well, it was pointed out to me originally, and then every once in a while I take a look at it again. And, you know, the special effects are bad, and so because of the special effects being bad, and, you know, they weren't trying for, like, a fantasy thing or anything like that. They were trying to actually be technological. They really did really inventive things with the special effects. You know, and they also tried to write stories where it wouldn't rely on the special effects. That was, you know, a huge hallmark of the original Star Trek stuff.
Yeah, although they look bad now.
Yeah.
But yeah. In the 60s when it aired, and somewhat later when I actually saw it, it was actually pretty awesome for the time.
I mean, yeah, it was.
Just the fact that they could do the transporter effect.
Yeah,
back then?
That still looks good.
That's
today.
Still pretty good.
And also,
what was it? It was water and glitter, right?
Yeah, and also, like, but now they've redone all like a lot of the special effects.
Yeah, the redone
the
ones, they look really nice.
Really?
Yeah, stills.
They for all the shots of the Enterprise, they redid them in CG.
There are other like shots as well where they zoomed outward and then they filled in the environment around.
That's actually
them.
Pretty awesome. Then, yeah.
I didn't know that.
That Blu-ray disc is now out, $62 on Amazon for the first season. I am considering it. I need to catch up.
Yeah, I wouldn't make fun of you for that or anything. You don't have to say this defensively.
And also, it's really strange to see, like, even when it's on television, like, when you see reruns of the original series, they use the HD stuff. So, like, this is, like, clearer than most television that's on right now.
Well, they use film. Yeah.
Going back to the effects for a second, I like the fact that on some of the shots where you see the Enterprise above the Earth, like, you know, just in orbit over the Earth, the first time that aired, no one had seen the Earth from space. So if you look at it, it actually looks like a, you know, rounded map, you know, with no weather patterns, no clouds or anything, because nobody had seen that iconic, blue-white marble from space.
Right.
Nobody had seen that.
Yeah, they had
when Star Trek.
They didn't have pictures of it. No one had seen it. People had seen it, but those people had to go up in space to see it. So, yeah. Also, there's a really big social aspect of Star Trek in that Gene Roddenberry, when he designed the series and when he created the series, he wanted it to be somewhat of a utopian future for the Earth. So that's why he wanted the multicultural crew.
Yes. And he also didn't want it to be very military.
Probably the most influential cast in television history, at least.
Right.
Yeah. Not forget that he also didn't want to define any of the sexual preferences of anyone either.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And later on in the series, there was actually the very first ever interracial kiss on TV.
That's true. I mean, that is the most influential... Yeah. television series, I think. Well, in terms of just the modern age right now. Like, you can argue about various things that were written by, you know, the old, like, the old comedy guys back in the day. But still, like, Star Trek is just, as television, so influential on just society today, you know?
Yeah, like, a lot of the famous African-American women, they all, like, say, yeah, Uhura was, you know, very influential to them because she was a black woman on television.
And
wasn't a slave or, you know.
And the Asian community talked about Sulu all the time because he didn't, you know, like.
He wasn't useless.
He wasn't useless. Two, he wasn't like, he didn't do anybody's laundry or anything like that. You know, he didn't do anything.
He didn't talk funny.
Chekhov was the one who talked funny.
But that's also, that was, you know, Cold War.
Yeah.
Actually, my favorite thing about that whole Sulu incident was they had an episode where he was supposed to go crazy. And they wanted to use him with a samurai sword as his weapon. And then he said, George Takei said, no, let's not do that. Can we do something like I'll have like a fencing sword or something like that? And I'll be more like Errol Flynn than I'm going to be like some sort of samurai. And they took that to heart. And that's why when you see the new movie, for those of you that don't know,
We'll just say it figures into that.
That's not really a fencing sword he uses.
But he still says he's trained in fencing rather than just like, I'm a samurai warrior or something like that.
It's just, you know, I mean, I also, of course, us being us, it's always cool that Starfleet's in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Lita actually just found out about that. She's only seen Wrath of Khan. That's it.
Oh, wow.
Well, okay. That's the thing to see.
I made her see it 3 weeks ago. That's why.
Did you ever actually see the original episode with Khan Noonien Singh?
No.
That was a really interesting episode.
Yeah, it's a really interesting episode, too, actually. Yeah, because, I mean, if you don't remember, Khan Noonien Singh, like, the concept behind him is that he's a genetically altered Superman.
Yep, I know that.
Yeah, and so the thing is that, you know, like, it reflects a lot of concerns that are still kind of relevant today, you know, about just, like, what
genetic
happens.
Genetic engineering.
Stuff like that. Like,
eugenics, things like that. Yeah.
Khan beats the crap out of Kirk in that episode.
Yeah, that's actually something that I still find amusing when you compare various TV series, because, you know, like I said, they didn't really have a big budget, and even if they had a big budget in the original series days, they wouldn't have been able to do as much with it. And so you get a lot of brawls.
Remember the one with the with Gorn, the really
low budget Satsu type guy.
I just saw a clip of that recently and like, wow, it looked that bad.
I remember there was a joke about it in Toy Fair about Gorn versus a Cylon, and they're racing to this finish line that's just like that this table length, and they're like, oh boy, here they come, and they're just like
Well, then there's the thing that they always make fun of with they make fun of a lot. It's just how when that one episode where Kirk just rolls around the studio, he just does a lot of rolls between rocks for no good reason. What is it? Just all these.
That's Galaxy Quest.
No, it was based on a Star Trek thing though, like everything else, Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
I mean, even the bathroom scene is based on something that really happened to William Shatner. What?
Nothing.
Yeah. Dom.
What? You're the one who keeps bringing up Garignac.
We will talk more about Garignac later on when we talk about the new movie, because there is a Garignac in it. and there's fake Garignac and then real Garignac.
Yes, that's true, actually. But anyway, original series is just, like, there's just since it was television, it did run for longer than your average television series. There are some big duds in there.
Let's
admit that.
Ran longer than your usual television series?
Well, some of them did.
Oh,
like Next Generation.
Okay. I was like the original series is only 3 seasons.
Yeah. Well, that 3 seasons is actually a lot more than a lot of TV series get, too.
Bonanza.
Yeah, what about Bonanza? Bonanza is far from your average television show.
But it raises the average up.
Yeah, it does. It does raise the average up, along with all of the soaps.
The other huge thing about Star Trek that really influenced later on is that it was actually canceled after 2 seasons, and they brought it back after a letter-writing campaign.
That's true.
And unfortunately...
Yeah, that probably is the first time it's ever happened.
That was the first time ever, and it was the only time ever until fairly recently, too. Yeah, that has given hope to all these canceled shows ever for trying to bring it back from the death.
Yeah.
But at this point, studio, I've heard studio executives are getting very tired of it.
Yes.
It's all Jericho's fault.
It's almost getting a negative effect.
Is it Jericho's fault? I thought it was the Browncoats' fault.
No, it's Jericho's fault. Because Jericho actually got another season because they sent in all those nuts. Then people started sending in all sorts of crap. And they're still doing it.
I like the Veronica Mars one where they send the dollar bills.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they it's because there's one episode where Veronica, it's actually a $20 bill that she does. She says, I think she writes her name on it or something like that. I can't remember anymore.
Anyway.
And so they sent in dollar bills.
Chuck is doing a Subway thing.
Yeah, yeah, and,
to try to save it?
Journeyman was Rice-A-Roni.
Is there something going on with Dollhouse or Terminator?
Terminator, they're sending in guns. Dollhouse, they're sending in dolls
and houses.
Or houses.
There's plenty of empty houses lying around these days.
The shipping is hell.
Oh man. So yeah, I mean, that was the original series, you know. And then when you got to Next Generation, the special effects got a lot better. The audience was a lot more ready for it.
Actually, I should mention all the stuff that happened between original series and Next Generation, which
you mean
is
the movies.
The movies.
Well, the movies, well, the and first also movie. And also like the great episode of William Shatner did for SNL, where he got, you know, he's at the Star Trek convention, and he just like yells at the fans. That's just a classic SNL sketch.
Actually, yeah.
That was the was that the first popular use of "Get a Life"?
I actually got to ask you guys about this. When Star Trek: The Next Generation was going to come, when you first did you hear about it before it started airing?
Oh yeah.
How? Because there was no internet.
Commercials on Fox.
Yeah, and also I was a fan of Reading Rainbow. And so I heard that, you know, LeVar Burton was going to be on Next Generation. I'm like, wow, that's so cool. He's going to be on Star Trek.
But, like, besides commercials, was there any other, like, how did you know, did you know of other people that were getting excited? Like, how did people connect to unite as a community for that?
Well, strangely enough, you would walk up to each other and open your mouth and close it again. In between, there would be sounds.
Believe it or not, I was in college at the time, just to date myself.
Oh, so that's probably.
And there was an internet.
Oh yes,
there
yes,
was
yes.
There was something called Usenet.
ARPANET. Oh,
Usenet, discussion boards, and we talked about it there. We also talked about it on the comic book forums. So yeah,
yeah. Wow. For me, like it was mostly my oldest brother who I've mentioned several times in the podcast, since he was really into comics and all that other really geeky stuff at the time, and he's a good 3 years older than me. Yeah, he was the one that told me about it.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we just talked. I mean, I grew up in Sacramento, which is a huge sci-fi town, apparently.
I wouldn't actually have thought about that.
Apparently, we had the highest viewership percentage for The X-Files throughout its entire run.
Well, there you go. All right.
That is a very odd fact.
I think I did hear that fact.
Probably from Mike?
No. This was a long time ago. Like this, it's like one of the only X-Files conventions.
Well, I guess it's a better claim to fame than Chico, the weed capital of California.
It was on the local news. It must be true.
Yeah, the only reason I ask you guys about this is because when Star Trek: The Next Generation came out, I was in kindergarten. So
wow.
So
you're so young.
I knew about it through Disney Afternoon.
I knew about it from my cousins who got me into science fiction in the first place. Like, they're like, hey, you know those Star Trek stories that we keep having you read, and you know the Star Trek cartoon that we try not to admit exists?
The 11 frames per second of animation?
Just like the Harlem
Why
Globetrotters. Like, well, let's see, it was in the same like vein as the Harlem Globetrotters cartoon, and anyway.
It's on DVD now. You get it?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's been out for a while.
No.
How come you don't own it?
Because I respect myself. So anyway, yeah, I mean, there were just a lot of people saying, hey, you should watch this because, you know, like everybody's loved Star Trek for so long and now they're making more. Take a look at that. And if it goes well, maybe this Patrick Stewart guy can play Professor X someday. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I the one thing I remember about when The Next Generation started was, it was, I guess, late 89, maybe early 90,
yeah,
when it first started. And then that's when my parents decided to move to Korea.
Oh.
So I caught the first, you know, maybe season, half a season maybe. And then in Korea, it's a lot harder to find The Next Generation. Although I did catch a few episodes here and there in Korea, but it was a lot harder to watch.
Especially without the internet.
Yeah.
Anything else about The Next Generation you guys want to go to it? Or do you want to start going into Deep Space Nine?
Well, The Next Generation really got a lot better writing after the second or third season.
And it really did push Star Trek into the mainstream. And it's what, I mean, Star Trek has to thank for, you know, for still surviving to this day.
They also went even farther than the original Star Trek in pushing science fiction concepts and social concepts into their episodes.
Oh, yeah, I definitely have to say they pushed a lot of social ideas that, well, even for that time were, yeah, really difficult to understand. Well, yeah. I mean, like, for the general audience to understand is things that were controversial that...
Yeah, there was that episode where there's a planet with no genders, and Riker falls in love with one of them.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that, too.
Her or him.
Well, here's what I want to wonder about, though. Like, when they did stuff like that, nobody really got on their case, though, right?
Actually,
did they?
There was some stuff.
There was, but it wasn't very major, right? Like,
yeah, because that's always the point of science fiction is that they could address these social issues without having to say, this is happening on Earth. They could say, some other planet, aliens.
And I mean, there's entire books on how Q is gay.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, when people are watching it, they don't think about it that way. It's just, you know, Q is there and he's a little strange and different from other people.
There's
omnipotent.
there's that really, really famous original series episode where you have the guys who have the face where half white and half black.
Oh, I know this episode too.
They hate each other because like one side
the colors are swapped, right?
Yeah, the colors are swapped on like the two, these two different sides.
They're black on the left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's always like cited as a very famous kind of look at racism.
And the thing is that, you know, partially because it's so removed from reality, people won't, you know, hit it as hard as, say, you know...
They'll cut it some slack.
Yeah. It won't actually say outright, hey, this is homosexuality we're talking about, or hey, this is race we're talking about, or, you know...
It is, but it isn't.
Yeah.
And there are actually a few episodes that I recently watched in syndication, which I think now is like, you can't get away with that. There was actually an episode about, what is it, genetic manipulation and cloning, and it's like the ethics of cloning. And in it, Riker vaporizes his own clone. Like,
oh,
it's nothing.
I remember that episode.
Yet another big thing about Next Generation that was a big controversy was having the kid on board.
Oh,
Wesley Crusher.
Right. Yes.
What did you guys think about him? Well, a lot of staring.
when it first aired, I was in college, so I hated him.
I love Will Wheaton.
Yeah, I didn't mind him at all. Although, like, in the early seasons, he was very annoying. But then they did some interesting things with his character.
And then they got rid
of him.
Yeah.
I love Will Wheaton.
Are you?
In that way?
Possibly. Have you ever read his blog?
It is, but he loves him in that
way,
but he doesn't love him in that
blogging.
Way. In that way, yes, but not in that way.
prison way.
Will Wheaton is cool, yes, but Wesley Crusher, on the other hand, in a later episode, he gets hooked up with Ashley Judd. Now, that was awesome.
Oh, yes.
Robin Leffler.
Robin's rules.
Damn, you guys know all these things. Like, I'm like, what?
I've seen like all the episodes multiple times. So
I really want to borrow Next Generation from you, because I remember I borrowed Deep Space Nine. I watched a lot of that.
The problem with me and Star Trek Next Generation is the Star Trek tax.
Yes, that is also a thing that usually holds me back is Star Trek tax, which for those of you that don't know means that if Star Trek decides it wants to come out on DVD and DVDs cost $30, Star Trek DVDs will cost $40. That kind of tax. And it usually that price doesn't go down for years, just like 5 years, 6 years.
Oh yeah, and this just I just remembered this, which is for you anime fans, there are people who are in, I guess, the production design who are big anime fans. So every once in a while, they would sneak in anime references, like you had the Akira class. Well, although that was a ship, I think, as well as a Japanese ship. But there's one main episode about Riker and his father. And they have this ring and it has Japanese letters everywhere. And you can see like one that says Akira. One that said, Dirty Pair. It was Giri and, what was the other? K.
Yeah. They slip a lot of those into the episodes. Yeah.
And, I can't remember what else it said. There's like a few other things in that room that were just straight anime references.
That's the one where they have those weird, like
American Gladiators.
Yeah, basically. American Gladiators one. Thank you. See, this is good why we have five. To inform me.
There you go. You are but a baby geek among these older geeks.
Oh my God. Yeah, when you guys were talking about Next Generation, I was like, oh my God, I was in kindergarten doing that. I was 89.
Well, hey, I'm not that much better.
Oh yeah, you're only 1 year older than
me. It's just that, you know, I was reading science. My cousins had me reading science fiction in second grade.
Oh, see, I was still having trouble even reading.
You still have trouble reading.
No.
Oh,
I'm fine.
Now that you have the Kindle,
no,
right?
I was almost held back a year because of reading.
Oh, okay.
But my math was like three grades ahead.
I'm not saying anything. All right. So let's get back to the Star Trek subject. I think we're okay with the Next Generation and
yes,
the original
so
series.
So I want to ask you guys, because this has always been what someone's told me, is that Deep Space Nine was actually a reaction to
Babylon 5.
Babylon 5. Is that true?
Yes.
Well, it depends on who you ask. According to Straczynski, the answer is hell yeah. Because he says he showed his script Bible or his story Bible to Rick Berman.
Really?
Right, and then they said, no, we can't do that. And then so he went off to work on it on his own. And then all of a sudden, not too long afterwards, the idea for Deep Space Nine came out. So,
but that wasn't Berman, was it? That was Ira Stephen Bear and...
No, Ira Stephen Bear came on later.
Really?
It was still created by the B&B. I know Brandon Braga, and who was the other B?
Berman?
Rick Berman.
Yeah. The one we were just talking
about. I was
about
to say Berman, but then you'd probably all look at me like, oh, the stupid baby kid.
That's what you're just a youngling, Kevin.
I'll just say for people who don't know, Rick Berman and Brian Braga are basically the two heads.
Brandon
Braga. Not Brian. Yeah. They're the two heads of Star Trek. And they're the two people who are cited mostly as the people who ruined Star Trek.
Well, they're the two who took over as the creative forces after Roddenberry.
Yeah, and so Deep Space Nine was the first post Roddenberry, right?
Well, Roddenberry died during Next Generation, or just before?
I think Deep Space Nine had just premiered, and you know Roddenberry wasn't exactly involved with even TNG stuff at that point.
Yeah.
He was only really involved in like maybe the first one or two seasons of Next Generation.
Yeah. So, it, like I said, it depends on who you ask as to how involved Babylon 5 was with Deep Space Nine. But there are some incredible similarities.
I'm going to side with Straczynski, as I will usually for almost anything. I really like Babylon 5. And that's why I'm just like, I really like Deep Space Nine too. And that's like still the one that I like the most, although I've also seen the most of it. But Babylon 5 had terrible production values, but it had great stories. And then I was like, Deep Space Nine has some good stories, but they have the money to make the sets. And when I say they have the money to make the sets, I mean they have more money to make the sets. So they look a little nicer.
Basically when DS9 started, that's when they were at like $1 million per episode for production.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
At that time, too?
Yeah, and that was
did
enormous
they get that
amount of
many
money
viewers?
I think Deep Space Nine, they said, was the highest rated premiere episode for that time.
Yeah. Whoa. Because I always got this feeling like people didn't really like Deep Space Nine. It was always like kind of that.
No, it started other strong brother. and then it dwindled.
Oh. Yeah.
It died off, and then it sort of picked up a little bit when they also latched on to another Babylon 5 idea, which is to have an ongoing storyline.
Oh. So how did everything work out over time during Deep Space Nine's
I didn't really pay era. That much attention to it while it was playing, actually. Because I did lose interest in it like around season three or four.
I followed pretty much just Next Generation.
And oh, really?
Yeah.
A lot of the quotes you have are from Deep Space Nine.
That's because, the thing was, I watched Next Generation, and then I watched a couple episodes of Deep Space Nine, and I didn't really like it, so I didn't watch it. And it's only when later seasons, like Alex was saying, the continuity, when that story grabbed me, I went back and started watching all I could.
Yeah, that's what I did. And also, this was right when Next Generation ended, and then you had Voyager, and then
I dropped pretty quick.
Yeah, I want more Star Trek, so I could either watch DS9 or Voyager. Well, yeah. I'll go with DS9.
If you had to pick, yes.
This is all. Sorry, Asian male on screen.
This is all I will say about Voyager. Is that, you know, we've been talking about these classic episodes about race, about, you know, gender equality, about, you know, class equality, things like that. You know what the episode I remember of Star Trek Voyager is? Oh, yeah, you remember that episode where they turned into lizards and had babies? It's like, what?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
The controversial subject of lizard babies.
Yes.
Well,
Deep Space Nine did hit some controversial subjects.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine hit more of it.
Well.
Deep Space Nine, a lot of people thought it was a direct, you know, comparison to the Middle East.
Yeah. Just a total intractable situation.
Yeah.
That they ended a little too easily.
Yeah. Let's ignore that part. Details.
Well, I want to ask you guys about this because Deep Space Nine actually takes away from the usual format that you used to have everyone's aboard a starship and everyone's instead grounded in just a, you know, one place. Did that affect how you watched it, or was it still just Star Trek to you? Did it feel different from what
it was definitely Star Trek different was? Because yeah. for me especially, it was you get tired of Alien of the Week. DS9 was the type of show where it was very good that they didn't go episodic, that they went for this serial kind of show, because they're in one place, and so it makes sense that they would have these ongoing stories.
Although it seems to me a little bit more like an extension of what the Next Generation did, because in the Next Generation, you saw their families. They had families on that ship, you know? And so there were actual, you know, stable characters other than just your main characters that would just come back because, hey, they're living there, you know? You actually got a sense that this was sort of, it wasn't a hotel floating in space, but, you know, it was something that they could actually, you know, have some measure of stability in.
Sometimes the Enterprise felt like a hotel floating in space.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Deep Space Nine station, it looked, you know, dark and gritty, and it showed its Cardassian architecture, its roots, as being a kind of gritty place.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it didn't seem that jarring to me, is the main point. Like, it was different, but, you know, I mean, not like we had, we'd run out of Next Generation and wanted more, you know, people wanted more just Star Trek. And what appealed to people about Star Trek wasn't the fact that it was the ship or anything like that, or aliens, all sorts of weird aliens and things like that. It was the fact that the writing was good. It wasn't always good, obviously, but it was good.
Yeah, well, the thing with DS9 was the original idea they had got stale pretty quickly.
That's true.
Which is why they lost a lot of viewers really early on. Which is too bad, because they had really great episodes.
Well, yet another thing, though, that was different about DS9 was that the worldview of the world of the Federation just kind of changed.
That's true.
Because in the original series and the Next Generation, it was Roddenberry's world. Roddenberry's world was that the future is better than it is now. In the DS9
world.
I see
where you're going with this. That's exactly right.
In the DS9 world, things started getting worse. And that's where that is also where they lost a lot of people. They lost me.
Yeah, it was really, they didn't portray the Federation as this perfect utopia as it was in the original series and Next Generation.
So, like, Star Trek's always been based around the idea of optimism, so,
I mean... And that's exactly right. Deep Space Nine no longer had that optimism.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because a large part of DS9 was viewed by people who weren't a part of the Federation, like the Ferengi or the Cardassians.
Even the Bajorans, they're allies.
Yeah, they're allies. They're not actually, well, they're part of the Federation, but they're new to the
Federation.
But
it is a huge jump for people to make.
I'm actually wondering because, you know, nowadays we're in a culture that really looks for things. I mean, like, everyone's talking about turning all their comic book properties into darker and, you know, more adult stories.
It's the 80s all over again.
Yeah, so what I'm wondering about is, would you think something like Deep Space Nine could survive a lot better nowadays, given the content that they're going for, especially since they're also serial.
Have you seen Battlestar Galactica?
Yes. That's what I was trying to get my point to, is like, a lot of stuff in Battlestar Galactica, their whole concept of bringing the fleet with them is basically a traveling version of Deep Space Nine, is what I originally thought about it. And, you know, all the issues aboard the ship, of course, there's not the issues about how to deal with the other aliens. Of course, they have that whole thing with the Cylons. How are they going to deal with them if they're trying to coexist and things like that? But yeah, I get this feeling Deep Space Nine was the one that was way ahead of its time.
It was.
Even compared to Next Generation, it was still more people like Next Generation, but Deep Space Nine seemed more progressive to me. When I watched it back on DVD, I didn't watch it while it was airing.
It's all a matter of your perspective, because Deep Space Nine did something that was completely different from what people expected out of Star Trek.
It may have been great, but it wasn't what I was looking for in a Star Trek show.
The thing was, it wasn't Roddenberry's Star Trek.
It wasn't, and therefore it wasn't our Star Trek.
So it was more like a reboot, really, then, right?
Well, for me, I don't really have any stock in, you know, any particular stock in Roddenberry's particular view of the Star Trek universe. So for me, it just felt like it was being fleshed out in a direction that I had not seen before, because I'm getting the perspective of the Ferengi, the Bajorans, and the Cardassians even. I mean, it's a war story. You see all sorts of facets that you would not see in peacetime.
There's a quote that my brother described DS9 as after we watched the first episode together of DS9, and he said, "This is great. This is the stuff that happens because of what the Enterprise does."
That's not bad. Yeah, I can see that.
Okay, so let's move on. I know that Deep Space Nine is actually probably one topic we could go on for a while, and I know of another topic we can go on for very, very brief. Actually, no, I know of one that can go for the briefest, but we'll get to that one next. Voyager, your thoughts? Do we really want to spend that much time on it?
I already said my piece on Voyager.
The main thing about Voyager that everyone remembers is when they decided to, I guess...
make an entire season not matter?
Start really selling out in the introduction of Seven of Nine.
What... a lot of people say is that, basically DS9 was saved because Voyager existed, because BNB went on and focused their attention on Voyager. So, what was his name? Bear?
Rick Berman?
No, Bear.
Ira Stephen Bear.
Yeah.
Why are they all with B's?
He had full control over DS9.
And it was better for it.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's why a lot of people say that DS9 only got better and Voyager just crapped out.
Well, Voyager didn't necessarily start that well either.
And also, it started this weird trend of them putting in the token Asian, but then changing his race.
So
I don't remember that one.
Mike just mentioned this a little bit earlier, but what happened with this? Like, he changed what they do?
Okay. In Voyager, you have Harry Kim, who is supposed to be Korean, and the actor who plays him is Chinese.
Garrett Wang.
And in Enterprise, you have a Korean who plays Japanese.
Yeah,
okay. Linda Park.
The fact that all that happened just. I think and all the Chinese in the future are dead because none of them are in any starships.
Even in the new movie, you have a Korean playing whatever Sulu. I guess Japanese. Yeah, yeah. Japanese.
Maybe it's just a tradition for them to do that.
Sulu.
Well, actually, no, they have Sulu, and he's Japanese. So
yeah, there are no Chinese in the Star Trek universe. So we're all dead.
Or Klingon, General Chang.
Either we're all dead or we're all Klingon.
Oh, let's not get into that, please.
I can see that happening.
If you were wondering why they changed, Worf doesn't want to talk about it.
It
is a long story.
In the original series, the Klingons were the Russians. And the Romulans were the Chinese, right?
I want to get into this. So,
the representation.
We have to talk about anything else with Voyager or Enterprise. Do we have anything to talk about?
Enterprise?
Did Enterprise exist?
No, I like Enterprise.
Okay.
I watched the first.
Hold your thought for just one more topic.
Although it did fail in a lot of areas. Overall, it was definitely a step. I wouldn't say a solid step forward. But it was it made progress.
It was better than Voyager, but it wasn't very good. However, the parts that were good about it were only probably good for the red-blooded male audience,
like the quarantine shower scene, for example.
The quarantine shower scene, for example.
What?
There was a shower scene.
They love that decontamination room.
Okay, so. This is back before they had transporters.
Yes.
So instead of being automatically decontaminated by the transporter, they had to stay in a decontamination chamber for a while.
Special gel
and they of course stripped down while doing it.
Are you serious?
and they had this gel that they had to rub on their bodies.
And so they rubbed them on each other.
Aren't you sorry you missed out?
And DePaul was shown in this room a lot.
For some odd reason.
Wow.
I had no problem with that part.
It's only logical.
Okay, Dom, your topic being...
What, Futurama?
Sure.
Because no. the only information I really have about Enterprise is from the Futurama movie with George Takei's head and Scott Bakula's head. Bashing against each other, going, way to ruin the franchise, Bakula.
No, and I don't want to offend anyone with this topic, but there was always this speculation about which alien species was related to a specific race. Actually, should we even talk about this?
Sure.
We can hit it briefly. Yeah. The thing is that, you know, it was mostly based on, you know, perceptions at the time.
So in...
Cold War era. In the original
series, it was the Cold War era. So the Klingons were the Russians. The Romulans were probably the Chinese.
And I don't know, who are the Vulcans then? I remember there are allegory to some.
I thought they were supposed to be Japanese, right? Like the Vulcans and Romulans were similar, but like a bit different.
Yeah, except that there was a Japanese on the ship.
Oh. So.
But, you know, it could have
been. Well, there's also a Russian on the ship.
Yeah, there's also a Russian on the ship. So it could have been.
Okay.
But yeah, actually, that was one of the things that people got really critical of when Deep Space Nine came around, because people were got offended because they... By the Ferengi, because they were like, are these not the Jews?
Well, some people thought they were the Japanese, because they're short.
Yeah. And so it was. The big ears thing was the big ears and the big nose was what people who were really hypersensitive about.
Oh, really? It Jewish, wasn't the whole.
Well, the let's see, big nose, big ear, hypersexual, and money grubbing was something that people have been very, you know, sensitive about with Jewish
stereotypes.
Representation. Yeah,
I can see how that would be interpreted. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, this
but
is
Quark is awesome.
Yeah, I know. I love the Ferengi. I think the Ferengi are awesome. But yeah,
here's a funny Star Trek thing, which is the actor who plays Quark, Armin Shimerman.
Yeah.
He was actually one of the first Ferengis ever on screen because
he the one that had the speaking role?
I don't think so.
He was one of the guys in the back.
Yeah, he was one of the three that was first shown in The Next Generation.
Yeah, nerd
and
boys.
And they actually brought him back to play a major character.
Well, he's not. I don't think he's supposed to be the same Ferengi.
Though. The problem was
that it was just weird that he gets to. He's like the guy you go to if you look if you're looking for a Ferengi.
When the Ferengi were originally introduced, they were supposed to be like super powerful and everybody was afraid of them. But then by the time Deep Space Nine came around, they're just mostly jokes.
Yeah, like
they lose their powers or something.
Since
they weren't presented the way they should have been. And actually, the actor, Armin Shimerman, he says that's one of his greatest acting regrets. That when he first portrayed the Ferengi, he went really over the top. And so the Ferengi lost all of their menace and became more comic caricatures. And when he got to play Quark, he did a lot more understated and he made his character a lot better.
And also, like, I was just thinking, like, since that first episode, have they ever shown that whip open that they have?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
The what?
The Ferengi had this whip thingy that was basically like a stunner. That if you got whipped, you were stunned. You were knocked out.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stunning. It was pretty awesome at the time, but they just lost it. Yeah. So that was the Ferengi were kind of a missed opportunity.
And Shimmerman actually felt it was his fault for a lot of it, for a long period.
Oh, he shouldn't. I love the Ferengi, just for Quark mainly.
And Armin Shimmerman is awesome.
That's why he worked really hard to make Quark a character.
Yeah, Quark is a good character, but the Ferengi as a race just kind of lost their menace. So
anyway, great comic relief, though, for DS9.
All right. It's deep into the episode. Movies topic.
I actually saw the first movie in the theater.
Wow.
Wow. Rank your movies. Actually, pick your top three.
Top three is easy.
Because I'm sure there are some we don't want to talk about, like five.
Five? There was a five?
I know.
They just skipped over it.
I know. They skipped over it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wow, why did they go from four to six?
For some reason, whenever I think of five, I think of Ghostbusters.
Because you mean Ghostbusters 2?
No, just Ghostbusters. Because, you know, I just imagine Ray asking, getting asked if he's God.
Very good. Are you the key master?
So anyway,
rank your movie.
Someone asks you, "Is you a god?" You say yes.
Exactly. So anyway,
I already know my ranking. It's 6-8.
Whoa. 8 is First Contact, right?
Yes. You cannot include the new movie because that will change things a lot.
Okay. So actually, mine goes 2-4-1.
One
as the third best.
I can't believe you don't have six in there.
I actually don't remember six.
Oh,
six was great.
Six is great.
Then I'll borrow it from somebody.
Underrated Star Trek movie.
No, I think the most underrated is actually three because a lot of people don't like it.
Three is the most overly bashed. It should not be considered a poor movie. It just got
Christopher Walken?
Lambert?
No, the Highlander.
I know who you're talking about. It's the guy who is in
Back to the Future.
Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah. Mike would have tied with me.
To me, like, whenever I watch that movie, I just see him. I don't see a Klingon.
So anyway, so two is the best, and I don't think I'll get any arguments about that one.
I like six more.
Yeah, but you won't get too much argument about it being on top of my list.
No, if someone says two is their favorite, I'm not going to argue with you.
Four I like because it's played for laughs.
Yes.
And it's got San Francisco.
And it's the most San Francisco of all of them. This is true.
It has the most Rice-A-Roni of all Star Trek movies.
Yes. But yeah.
So far.
And then one I don't necessarily see as a great movie in and of itself, but I see it as an important historic moment.
Oh, in which a canceled television series actually got a movie.
Not only that, but also the simulation of the Genesis bomb.
That was two.
Damn it! Oh, what's that sound?
Cut this. So okay, I missed one. I forgot one entirely. Take it off of my list.
I think you're thinking of three. Three has. Well, three is not two, and it has to do with the Genesis bomb.
Okay.
Yeah, one is V'ger.
One is V'ger.
One is the cloud. I was like, you like one?
Oh, that's
you
right.
Like
one is
one
V'ger.
Above six?
V'ger and the bald lady.
Okay, screw that. I will claim that it was because I'm not paying attention.
Sung.
I keep making. I've made fun of V'ger in this podcast.
Yes.
What am I thinking?
All right. Mine is 4 and 6. 4 is my number one.
4 is your number one.
Yes.
Wow.
Because it's just pure fun.
So yeah, I think I am thinking of. Can I put 2 in my list twice? Am I allowed to?
No.
No.
Fine.
Skipping Dom. Go ahead,
Sung. Sung is copying me because that's my order too.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
2 is close for third place, but
yeah, I really liked 2, but it did lack in certain areas for me.
It just feels a lot dated now when you see it.
Yeah, it does.
What, you don't like Ricardo Montalban's plastic muscles, or were they rubber?
That was him.
That's actually him.
Yeah. He worked out.
Yeah, he worked out
and
for the role.
He's ripped. He's Ricardo Montalban.
I know.
He's
ripped. I know, but it still looks really funny.
It's rich Corinthian leather.
I know. But isn't it funny looking, though?
Yeah. My main issue with 2 is you don't really get the sense of who Khan is and what his potential really is.
Oh, yeah, because
unless you know the series.
Unless you watch the series. Because otherwise, he's just a guy who wants revenge.
And it didn't quite make my list because, to me, 2, 3, 4 is an arc. I didn't realize it when I was watching them separately, but when you watch them all together, it's one story. So it's like you can't really take part of a story except for the funny one, 4.
Yeah, they're actually selling 2, 3, 4 as a box set trilogy for Blu-ray.
Really?
Yeah, or you could buy all 6. It's weird.
Then 2 is the it's a new hope.
How would Search for Spock be Empire?
I don't know.
You are banned.
Now I get the mic all to myself.
Wait, and then so the motion picture becomes Revenge.
No, the motion picture
I can almost see it.
What?
I can almost see it. It's because what's it called? Kirk's son dies in 3.
Spoiler.
Whatever. Yeah. Well, Spock dies in 2. Oh no.
And comes spoiler. Back in 3.
And he comes back in 3.
Actually, be a spoiler for some people. Oh, it's your own fault.
The third movie is called The Search for Spock.
What if someone was listening to this podcast and his baby just got born and the baby heard on the speakers? Spock dies.
Dude, here's the thing. I saw 1 and 2 for the first time when I was really, really young. And that's why I mushed them together. Yeah, and whatever. So for all this baby who's born on the podcast knows, there is no...
Baby's born on the podcast.
That's a new one for the tag cloud.
But anyway, if this baby who was born and raised on the S Words podcast, like, at all believes anything we say, then it's that baby's day. That's that baby's fault. Actually, it's the baby's parents' fault. Sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Using the S Words as a surrogate
that
babysitter.
Has been Dom's rant on bad parenting of
through the podcast
of the 21st century.
Using the podcast as babysitter.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's not a spoiler. The movie's older than you are. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually,
is 2 old? Actually, older?
82, right?
Okay, so it is older,
older
than you
than
are.
Okay. So,
you haven't given us your ranking.
My 3 are actually 2, 4, and 3.
Okay.
In that
the
order.
The trilogy sticks well.
Yeah,
with you.
just slightly out of order. 2 is, of course. Because it's the kick-ass, if I can say that, the most kick-ass.
You can say ass.
Yeah.
It's the ass-kickingest, as I keep saying it, movie of, I think it's the ass-kickingest science fiction movie, like maybe.
Even over Terminator?
That isn't Star Wars, right? That isn't Star Wars?
It's got the best space battles.
Oh, that's true.
That aren't Star Wars?
Yes. We will not say anything more. And 3 because, four because, well, yeah, it's awesome. Leonard Nimoy directed it. And 3 because
Leonard Nimoy also directed that one.
3 because it is, I think, much better than most people think it is.
I think it is, but especially the scene where they hijack the Enterprise. I like that a lot.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's
really
actually
like the
really
funny.
The first half of the movie has a lot more steam than the second half.
Yeah, because the second half was like it kind of lost me, because like you have Spock growing up basically on that planet. And I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Don't you also like Spock speaking through DeForest Kelly's mouth?
That was pretty cool.
Okay, I asked you guys to come up with your list of top three Star Trek moments.
You didn't actually give us your top three, did you?
I did.
You did? Okay.
It was 6, 2, 8.
Okay. That's right. We weren't actually going to talk about it this more. It was really quick.
I'll tell you this. 8 is actually the first Star Trek. No. 7 is the first Star Trek movie I've seen in a theater.
Which one is that?
Generations. We will talk no more about this.
Sadly, the first one I saw in a theater was Insurrection.
Yeah.
The first one I saw in a theater was Star Trek 2, probably.
Wow. You're lucky.
Yeah, you are lucky.
My second one was 8, and I actually went in with a friend of mine who was I was a big Star Wars fan, and I had a friend that was a big Star Trek fan, and we would always talk about like which one's better. I said, you know, I'll go see Star Trek 8 with you. And I was like, wow, this is actually really awesome, especially when you don't come from knowing very much about Star Trek. That's a very good introduction to the next generation, because it's like it's very well paced. It's actually pretty entertaining, and
that's what it was meant to do.
Yeah, yep, yeah. I loved it,
and it actually had some history in it too with Cochrane.
Yeah, and Magic Carpet Ride, Steppenwolf.
Why? It's better than Beastie Boys in the Caribbean.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Nothing is wrong with...
No, okay. I was going to say, like, who would have imagined Beastie Boys in a Star Trek soundtrack?
So now that we're done with the movies, let's go into your top three Star Trek moments. I had you guys come up with them before you got here. Mike is totally prepared for this.
I only have 14.
I am slightly prepared.
Yeah, this podcast is already really long, so please cut it to an actual 3.
So
we like the long ones, so. But not that long.
Kevin doesn't like it that long.
They're not very good at raising babies. So I'm going to go to each one of you guys. You just list them 3, 2, 1. And if you have honorable mentions, just say them really briefly.
All right. 3 is most of the episode. Trials and Tribulations? Where they went back in time and
from the Next Generation,
from Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine.
They went back in time.
That was from when I stopped watching Deep Space Nine. So
yeah, but
it had Worf. So
yeah, and so that one was fun. My second favorite is actually the last line of the Menagerie. Well, the last line that the aliens have, which is "May you be as happy in your reality as he is in his fantasy," which is just a really good line. And number one is just because when we were talking about brawling, it came to mind. It's that episode in the original series where Kirk decides that the best way to save his crew is to beat the crap out of Spock to get him angry, which is why I enjoyed that. That was another thing that I enjoyed about the movie, the recent one.
All right, my number 3, I'm going to need Mike's help with to complete this, which is a particular episode of Next Generation. And it starts with the line, "There once was a woman from Venus whose body was shaped like
Data."
I know this one.
Yes.
Too.
Okay. Data was the source of the best jokes in Next Generation. Like, wait, which episode was it where just to save him, he just bursts into song at random? Like, wasn't it Gilbert and Sullivan?
That was in one of the movies.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah,
I think that was also a reference to it.
That was interesting, yes.
Mr. Okay. Worf, are you familiar with Gilbert and Sullivan?
No, Captain. I have not had the opportunity to meet all the new crew members.
That and, like, it was Generations where Data was, like, he was laughing. He's like, he was talking to Jordan. He's like, you told that great joke. I was like, I don't even remember the joke anymore.
The Vulcan in the clown suit can stay, but the Ferengi has to go. You told the joke. That was the punchline. What are you talking about? This was at the Farpoint mission. Farpoint? Data, that was 7 years ago.
I know. I just got it.
One of the few memorable moments of Generations.
Yeah. All right. My number two is actually my favorite ship-to-ship battle scene, which is Star Trek VI, The End, where it's the Enterprise against the cloaked ship and later on the Excelsior. And to me, there's just so many great things going on. It's like, what's his name, doing all the quotes?
The General Chang.
Yeah, General Chang.
The Chinese
Klingon.
God, why am I
freaking out on these names? And,
hey, at least you're forgetting names. I forgot numbers.
It's also very pivotal because they're trying to get to the conference and they're trying to save the Chancellor from Odo. I mean, that Admiral.
All right.
And then my number one is the classic, the very end of The Best of Both Worlds, part one. there's a great story that Patrick Stewart had about that, which was, this is during the summer after the episode aired. He's in his car and he's in a convertible. And this is in LA. And this guy shouts at him. And like, when he's in the car, he goes, Hey, you ruined my summer.
Ah, Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
The same thing happened to George Lucas.
Except
for three years.
Actually, these days, it's more like, hey, you ruined my childhood.
That is
or my
forever.
Baby's childhood. You ruined my new baby's childhood. Now he only knows the new
Spock
movies.
Died.
That Spock died. All right, Alex, let's move on to your top three.
Oh, no.
Okay, my number three is from the original Tribbles episode, right towards the end, where Kirk turns to Scott and says, what did you do with him? And Scotty says, I got rid of him.
That's a good moment.
My number two is from The Wrath of Khan. Kirk explains how he beat the Kobayashi Maru sequence. And he says, I don't believe in no-win situations. And then my number one is from The Next Generation. Picard is getting tortured. And
by the Cardassians.
Yeah, you took my...
I had it written here before I saw yours.
It's a good one, though.
But and this is actually kind of relevant today.
Yeah.
Picard is being tortured, and he doesn't know what they're trying to torture him for. So they're trying to break him. And one of the things they're trying to get him to say is have him look at four lights and say, there are five lights. So he keeps saying, there are four lights.
There are four lights.
And it's a very important episode, actually.
This is a great episode.
This is him getting taken by the Cardassians. And he's being tortured by the Cardassians.
Yeah, this was one of the first appearances of the Cardassians, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So anyway, So they're torturing him and trying to get him... just trying to break him because he actually does not know what they're trying to, the information that they're trying to get out of him. So that's my number one.
I was laughing because I just realized something, which was, Cardassians and Kardashian.
Oh, as in Kim Kardashian, yes. I know. Thanks, Sung.
I don't get it.
All right.
You're too young. You'll learn later.
Most of mine are actually lines from episodes, and so there's this shared line across two episodes, spoken once by one Montgomery Scott, and the second time around by Lieutenant Commander Data, regarding a strange drink that they cannot identify that they pull out of a bar. When asked, what is it? The only thing they can say is, it is green. And then they get smashed. Another moment, since I have to pick a replacement for my There Are Four Lights.
You can still use There Are Four Lights.
Oh, I'm not really on that, sorry, but I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, actually...
I thought you were just joking.
Then again, I specifically didn't pick There Are Four Lights because Alex told me not to.
And yeah, I will piggyback onto Sung's scene where the Enterprise is fighting the cloaked bird of prey. With the Excelsior. And General Chang is quoting, you know, Julius Caesar. That's the Shakespeare play. And Bones is in the torpedo bay helping Spock reconfigure a torpedo. And he just says, I'd give real money if he'd shut up. Yeah. And my number one it's probably my favorite episode, so I'll just say the whole episode, but Darmok and Jalad. Yes. At Tanagra.
The funny thing is that I know a lot of people who are linguists and they despise that episode.
They can despise it all they want. It's an awesome episode.
Wait, what is this?
It's the one where some captain decides that the best way to get Picard to understand him is to kidnap him and maroon themselves on an island, on a planet. Sorry, not an island.
And on a whole planet
against a monster.
Against a monster. And
because a danger shared can bring two peoples together.
Oh.
But yeah, so the thing is, what he does there is the reason that the universal translator can't understand him.
They're getting because, all the words right, but yeah, not the meanings behind it.
Is because that's the one where they talk in stories. Yeah. I remember in college, we actually had like loud hour-long debates about how you would raise children in that environment.
But yeah. actually, it's even if some linguists hate it, there are other linguists. There are stories about people in college classes who professors will show that episode
it's a very highly debated episode.
As a tool,
it's one you should watch. I think you should borrow it from language.
Well, I'm actually going to watch all
because
of this
you actually learn quite a, some key phrases that actually have meaning.
Yes,
and you learn them in the episode, and it's because Picard has to learn it, so you learn it along with him.
You also, if you didn't know the legend of Gilgamesh, you actually learn about Gilgamesh from it, which is something that I really appreciate. Where people actually learned a lot of Shakespeare. Or British literature, like Sherlock Holmes, and Babylonian mythology from Star Trek, The Next Generation.
And just so I have a comic relief moment,
my favorite Quentin, moment from 8, isn't it?
Star Trek First Contact?
Yes.
Where Beverly Crusher is in the sick bay, and she's trying to evacuate people, and the Borg are bashing down the door. And she says, oh, I promised myself I'd never do this. Computer, activate emergency medical program. And the EMH shows up. Please state the nature of the medical emergency. Well, there's a bunch of Borg outside the door. Can you stall them?
We should note that the emergency medical hologram is the doctor.
It's Robert Picardo.
Yeah.
From Voyager. And he was probably the best thing on Voyager.
Yeah. Just his snark.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is true.
So the Borg bust down the door, and all Robert Picardo could say is, according to Starfleet medical research, Borg implants can cause severe skin irritations. Perhaps you'd like an analgesic cream?
All right, I'm going to go through mine. Man, I don't feel like mine are so cool as all of you guys. My number 3 is actually when I went back and saw Star Trek 6, and that first moment you see Sulu is now captain of the USS Excelsior.
That is a cool moment.
And I was like, oh my God, an Asian guy. He's the captain of the ship.
And you don't understand how many decades went by before we saw that.
Yeah. Although there was a Japanese admiral before that we saw.
And also, how many decades it took him to be not an ensign?
That's true.
Yeah, it was one of George Takei's longstanding complaints that in this meritocracy-based system of Starfleet, that it took so long for this genius Sulu to actually rise to the rank of captain.
All right. My number 2 is Deep Space Nine, the baseball episode.
Yes.
Take me out to the holosuite.
Yes.
Because you got Ferengi, you got baseball, you got everything a bit more lighthearted, and of course the bunt at the very end. I love it. I love the camp of it in the same way that I love the X-Files baseball episode as well.
Baseball episodes and of anything Simpsons are the best episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the first Simpsons baseball episode, right? Not
yes,
the one where Mark McGuire.
There are no other.
The one with Mark McGuire and the government conspiracy.
No, that what?
That's,
are
not,
you
that's
talking
not even
about,
a baseball.
Are you
episode?
Talking about an American Dad episode? No, I'm kidding.
So anyway,
my number 1, Sung took it. Best of Both Worlds, the 2-parter. I've seen that at least, and I'm like, wow, what a way to handle a television series, especially back then. Jeez, like, because really, how often do you really get people excited about what's going to happen next season, whether Patrick Stewart was actually going to sign on for another season? What if they actually got rid of him? Or Yeah, like you have to imagine the balls to be able to do that.
I lived through that. I was on the edge of my seat waiting.
Oh yeah, and
season to start.
Here's my question, Alex. So how fevered was Usenet compared to like the stuff you see now?
It's not as crazy because at least to be in Usenet, you had to be affiliated with the university.
That's true. As opposed to when AOL came out and then you had the endless September.
Yes.
Here's the thing about the best of both worlds, which was, and this was true for a lot of cliffhanger TV series, even to this day, which is a lot of times they'll write the cliffhanger without knowing how it ends.
Was this the first time Star Trek did the cliffhanger season ending?
And so basically during the summer, they had to figure out, okay, so how do we fix this?
here's one question.
That was the last time, though.
Wait, how many
they ended with the cliffhanger?
Did the original series even have that many two-part episodes?
No.
It's very rare they have a multi-episode story.
In the original series, they had one.
I think they just had one, right?
No. Menagerie.
Yeah.
Which was the pilot.
Yeah.
The original pilot.
And so, yeah,
Eventually, they did start having two-parters for every season.
Okay.
Yeah, the season finales and, you know, the second part is the season opener of the following season. The premiere and the finale, those are the only two-part ones I can think. Oh, wait. Yeah, those are the only two-part ones I can think of.
There are some continuing stories, like one about Worf's brother.
Okay.
And, like, the whole thing with the Klingon Empire.
Oh, right.
That was a two-parter.
All right. That wraps up our discussion about our top Star Trek moments. Let's go into the new movie.
Wow.
Everyone gets one word, but I guess that's your word. Everyone gets one sentence. What do you really feel about it? Like, how briefly can you explain what you think about it?
I could use one word, which is nerdgasm.
That's a much more articulate way of saying what I said.
Yeah, my word is finally.
Can I use two words?
Sure. Only if they're connected by a hyphen.
They are.
Good.
Because the one that doesn't translate on podcast is this. Jaw-dropping.
And mine has to be super smile. One that was there the entire time that after it was over, I was like, oh, my head hurts so much. My cheek muscles hurt so much. Yeah. I have to say, and, you know, this is what I've been telling everyone that's been asking me about this movie. And it coming as a Star Wars fan, like, the way I think about this new movie is this is what Star Wars fans wanted when we got the prequels and we didn't get this. And, you know, it hurts so much to know that we didn't get this and we expected we would. And now the other side. Now, I'm not like an anti-Trek guy, but like, wow.
He's anti-Trek.
You Trekkers. Wow. What a huge, you know, like, I know some of you might not like it. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be someone that doesn't, right? But what a huge gift to be given by all these people that really love Star Trek and wanted to make the something so that Star Trek was cool again.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's definitely an excellent reboot. It's much, much, much better than the reboot they tried earlier with Enterprise.
They got the characters right. That's the very, very important part for everybody who was watching that movie nervous.
Well, but it was a great use of... there was a lot of great use of bits and pieces from the original series, too.
But the thing is that it didn't wallow in them.
But yeah,
you know?
it felt natural. It was only bits and pieces.
Yeah,
from it.
Exactly.
It didn't have to... It didn't just dump all the original series on this new movie.
I just felt like they worked so hard with this movie to get it right.
Yes.
And it shows.
And
it does show.
Let me bring this up, too. When right after the movie, Dom, you asked me how much did this movie cost. It cost, I looked it up, and the estimate is $150 million budget. The same budget that Wolverine had. And I cannot understand.
That's actually what I said.
How that is possible.
It feels like a $300 million movie.
That's what I actually said to you. It's like, wait, didn't Wolverine cast the same? I think I said that to you in the theater, didn't I?
And I'm just like, wow. Talk about really stretching and making sure that everything was of quality. And
well, okay, here's the thing for me. There are two things that I can say about the movie, which is the first is this movie is everything that Star Trek needed. The second thing is that there are plot holes big enough for the Enterprise to fly through.
Yes. Yes, there are. We actually were talking about them before this podcast.
Details, details.
And Kevin was holding his head going, oh, right.
No, I mean, yeah, but they find a way to coast around it pretty well. I think they did a good job of coasting.
As long as you go into the movie just going, okay, this is a movie that's just pure entertainment. I'm not saying like you just watch it for fun. I'm saying almost every second of the movie is entertaining to an incredible degree.
Yeah.
There was only one part of the movie I felt kind of dragged, and that led straight into Scotty, so everything was fine.
Yes.
So I want to say, like, we probably shouldn't say too much about what goes on near the end or, like, whatever with the spoilers.
Right.
Because this is actually a recent movie that I don't want to spoil for anyone.
Yeah, in this case, we don't want to spoil this movie. We actively do not
I would like to think about things that most people haven't been talking about. And what I'm really wondering about is that, so Star Trek is supposed to be a lot more about optimism, about exploration, about discovery.
Yes.
But this new Star Trek film plays a lot more like a space opera. It's all about adventure and excitement, and there's not so much time spent looking within. But, you know, I understand that sometimes you just need that kickstart, right? You need something to just really go for it, and you can get to that later. You just need to get your audience now.
Right.
Yeah, there's a great mock review that The Onion did.
Oh, yes, I love that one.
Where to make it short, this is not the Star Trek that we grew up on, and it's intentionally so. It is a major reboot.
Yes.
And it's a different view, but it's exciting, it's fun, and which is what a lot of Star Trek was lacking.
And like I said, for a lot of people with Star Trek, the original Star Trek was a lot of it was a character study. You know, like There are actually bookshelves of study about Kirk, Spock, and Bones. I'm serious about
Trinity.
This. Yeah. There are entire like treatises on this, and it's just character studies because the characters are fascinating, and they got them right. And that is just something that is so refreshing to anybody who, you know, may have in a fevered dream seen Star Wars movies where Darth Vader was turned into this little pussy boy.
Emo teen?
Not that happened at all, right?
No.
It didn't happen.
That could never happen. Darth Vader is like the coolest villain.
Ever. Ever.
Yeah, what I really liked about this movie was the fun that they were able to capture from the 70s, like just the whimsical, just funny quips, and they really packed it in.
Yeah, it's
in the
paced
movie.
So well. I don't feel like I saw much fat in the entire thing.
Yeah,
we don't have any problem with the miniskirts either.
Oh, and this is one thing I loved. This is another thing I really loved about the movie, which was, and this is something that has been lacking in every other Star Trek movie, which is they gave every single one of the main characters something important to do in the movie.
Well, a lot of that was because of Shatner back in the old days, but anyway.
Well, also I mean, like, in every movie, you have people who are just there. They don't really add anything to the movie. In this movie, every single one of those original series characters had something very specific, and they're something
very
specific
the
and
plot.
Very important to the plot, yeah.
Why do I have a feeling that this is going to turn into a science fiction version of Ocean's 11 and it won't capture this magic again?
No. I believe that.
I believe too, but
the second time around, they're going to get a lot into a very big, deep, big story, and it's going to be huge, and it's going to do well. And
yeah, that's my hope. I would love that to happen.
Between, you know, now and the next time I see Star Trek, which is going to be probably tomorrow.
Yeah, same here.
I cannot wait for the next film. I feel so much like when they brought back Batman with Batman Begins.
Yes.
And I'm just like, now I'm waiting for what's going to be the Dark Knight. Is it going to be the reboot Wrath of Khan. They're going to bring
that
Khan.
Would
he
be
is out
so
there in
awesome.
Space in their, you know, universe.
Yep,
and wow, can you just imagine how you know, I'd be at Comic-Con and there'd be the new Star Trek panel and they're
going to
announce...
Who would play him? Enrico Iglesias?
They're going to announce Khan.
Enrique, sorry.
And it's going to be all of us getting up out of the chair going, oh my God! And it'll be worth it because they will care to make it good.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll say another thing. Like, the moment I knew that this movie would be brilliant was, and this is given away in the trailer, so I hope I'm not spoiling it for anyone, which is, the 12 minutes that, James Kirk's dad is captain. That is a moment I was like, that's just the scene of the back and forth and I can't say with who and whatnot. I was just like, oh my God, this is brilliant. It's cheesy, but it's like done so perfectly well.
You know, I was watching that. I was like, you know, this scene is actually probably better than a lot of, any of the scenes in a lot of, all their movies. And I was just like, wow, they're really handling this. And I'm just hoping this is not time, you know?
Yeah, because going into that scene, I'm like, okay, this could be really, really, really cheesy and stupid. And then like,
and it was really cheesy, but it wasn't stupid.
That's the important part for us. Oh, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah, that was done really well.
Yeah.
I would like to point out, because I mentioned this earlier, the moment with Grignac, which is
don't forget fake Grignac.
Yes. there is what you'll see it. I mean, they show you in the trailer a little bit that Kirk is eventually on this ice planet.
Yes.
And he's chased by these creatures. Well, you will understand the concept of fake Grignac.
And Grignac.
Because it really is exactly the same, moment. Isn't it?
It really does feel exactly the same. Yes. I was just like, during that, I was like, oh, it's Grignac. You have nothing to do with Galaxy. Anyways, one other thing I want to mention. I want to know whether you guys caught this too. When Kirk, this is not a spoiler, when Kirk gets on the ship, he hits his head against a beam.
Oh, yeah.
That is a Star Trek V reference, isn't it?
Yes.
And it was so much better. That scene is better than the entire Star Trek V film alone.
The scene where you first see McCoy is a reference to the original motion picture.
Oh, God, yes. And the quote he has at the very end, he's like, I'm down to my bones. And I was like, oh, my God, it is. Oh, my God.
I'm not even
a Star Trek fan, and I'm geeking out.
They did most of that really well.
Yeah, like, they got the dialogue down. The dialogue was really well written.
Like, I don't think there was any single scene on the Enterprise that I could look at and say, you know, they could have done that better. Because, like, the dialogue scenes between Kirk and Spock, even the silly Star Trek moment where there's just, like, this piece of engineering that really shouldn't be there, but... It's dangerous, so it's there. That's just really fun.
Yeah. It's like, okay,
sure, why not, right?
I ask you guys.
And the way they save them is like, that shouldn't be there either, but that's okay.
Whatever. Who was...
Starfleet plans ahead.
Yes. Just in case.
This is actually, I think for a lot of us, it actually might be a very difficult decision. Who was your favorite character in this? Because they all do a good job.
Yeah, they do.
Don't make me choose.
I know. This is, you know, but I'm going to have
it's
to say,
like... making me choose between my children.
For the first time ever, I like Kirk the most. And I've never liked Captain Kirk. I never thought Shatner's Kirk was, like... I didn't think he was the best. I always liked maybe Bones or
I can say
someone
who I
liked
the least, which was Eric Bagna.
Well, okay, I'm talking about
at least,
crew members.
Yeah, crew members.
Eric Bagna, I don't care.
I have to say that I actually like the...
You're not going to say Scotty?
No, I'm going to say Spock. I like their version of Spock a lot. Like, you get a lot more into him. Like, you got that a lot on the surface in the original series, and then you got a lot in, which movie was the one where he got really horny?
Spock in Heat?
Yeah, which one was that?
It was a TV episode.
That was, it was a TV episode
In the movie.
What?
It's a famous
battle with the staffs with the
axe
moon things on them.
Well, unfortunately,
the one that's also in Cable Guy
and also in Futurama as well.
Yes,
they had a great scene with that.
But anyway,
like, unfortunately, Kirstie Alley wasn't the female Vulcan in that one.
Yeah, but anyway, so the thing is that I mean they got a lot of the core Spock character really well, you know? Like, yeah. Even when they got him growing up, that was really good.
I just remember in the school scene.
Yes.
Yes.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
It's not a spoiler if we say the line, right?
No, go ahead.
Have you formulated new insults for me today?
I assume you have.
I assume you have formulated new insults. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Can we get a on that?
No. It's too new.
He will remember it better tomorrow.
You haven't seen it twice yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen it twice yet. There was just so much awesome pointed at me that, you know, it was like drinking from the fire hose of awesome.
I'll say my favorite character was Uhura. Uhura?
See, how did he not lose points Uhuru? For that?
I will have to say, he was quick on the draw. I was about to be like, what?
I keep on saying Uhuru.
I will worry. Uhura. Because I'm losing points, like, weekly at this point.
Like, the points matter.
Sorry, you mean it's like, whose line is it anyway, then?
Yes.
So, okay, I'll say Uhura because they really made her character more than just being the token black woman.
Although they made jokes about that.
Yeah.
It's like, I speak, what is it, how many languages? Anyway, she just makes reference, like, why am I stuck here? I can do a lot more than this.
Yeah.
I actually feel like they gave her a lot.
And then you find out the reason why.
Yes.
Yes, which we won't say.
And it goes back to a review I read about, what was the last one that didn't exist?
Nemesis,
yeah. Sorry. Yeah, it's hard for me to remember those movies that didn't exist. Anyways, it was there was a great quote. I can't remember the quote correctly, but it was you know this movie may be set in the 24th century, but the writers were definitely stuck in the 20th century because it was a whole, you know, like mind rape thing that they're bashing.
Oh yeah, the Deanna Troi thing, right?
Yeah. And it's been this thing of like they always downplay the women on Star Trek
until Voyager.
Even with Voyager.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You spend a lot of time with Ensign Kim in Paris.
No, the ones who fix the problems half the time are the captain and Seven of Nine.
Okay. So anyway, anything else about the movie?
No, other than Alex, oh, character? Your favorite?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I'm so conflicted. I love them all.
You mean you should choose Spock because he's the conflicted one.
You can choose the red shirt. The parachuting red shirt.
Yeah, the parachuting red shirt. Parachuting red. Olsen.
Wow. They gave him that name.
I've only seen it once. Yeah, I have. Well, no, I remember the name too. Once, too.
Whatever. His name's Olsen.
Yes, his name is Olsen, actually.
Or O-L-S-O-N.
Yeah, that's because you haven't read you haven't studied the IMDb page yet.
So anyway, Alex,
I love them all. I can't choose.
That's fair.
That's my choice.
Who do you think had the best line? How about that?
Oh, Scotty, of course.
Just checking.
I don't know about that.
Which line would that be, actually? Because he had quite a few.
He had quite a few good lines.
You're talking about the ship is fun.
I like this ship.
It's exciting.
I find myself in the same boat as Alex. I can't really choose. They are all really well done.
What about Kirk's hands?
that was fun. As far as the best line goes, I like when he's sick in that one scene and he's being dragged around the ship by Dr. McCoy. I guess he's not the doctor yet, but
no, he's still a doctor. He's just not.
No, he is a doctor. That's true. Okay, yeah. So he's being dragged around.
In fact,
he's
a doctor at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah,
and like, you know, there's some random extra that walks by in a miniskirt, and Kurt says, "Hey, how you doing?"
Oh yes.
All right. The hands remind me. For those of you who haven't seen the movie yet or are going to see it again, go back to Star Trek II. There's a scene where Kirk says he's allergic to a specific medicine. I want to know if it's the same medicine that they have in this movie.
I'm sure we'll all find out the answer tomorrow.
Probably,
people will write in telling us the answer and be like, oh yeah, we found out too.
Because if that's true, then that's a very cool reference.
Well, we'll find out.
It seems to be the type of thing they would put
in. Yeah,
they put a lot of care into this.
Yeah, they did put a lot of care into this.
I forgot one other character that No, he still doesn't trump Kirk, but he comes in a close second, and that would be Scotty's assistant.
Yes.
Well, you will know what I'm talking about when you see it.
That was so random, too. Cool.
I would love an action figure or little plush doll of that guy.
Actually, I would
know
agree.
And I don't know anything about him. It was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not for climbing.
Any other thoughts on the movie? It's hard to talk about it because all you really want to do is say what's so great about it, and everyone already knows
all these
by this
spoiler
point.
Things. All these spoilers. I tell you, I will say something. They haven't fixed voice recognition yet.
Yes.
The 23rd century.
That's true.
The one thing that I can say, it pretty much has already been said. Like, the character interactions are brilliant in this movie. Even the new wrinkle they added, which was kind of what the hell at first, you got into it, you know? Like, even saying what kind of new interaction it is kind of a spoiler, so.
You'll know what it is.
Yeah, you'll know what it is.
Yeah. And then you'll go, oh, hey.
And you'll go, what the? Oh, hey, I guess that makes sense. All right.
Yeah, and then you'll be wanting some fine Vietnamese noodles.
Yes.
there's just like a million different great
Vietnamese noodles
moments.
On wheels.
Did you hear that they cut out these radish slices as the same shape as the Starfleet insignia?
Yeah, I hope they don't get
sold out in 2 hours.
I hope they don't get
sued. Yeah,
wow.
They usually can't even sell out in like a hot, you know, in like a regular day when people are really hungry in like good places.
Yeah.
And yet Star Trek sold more pho than they've ever sold before. So big congrats to What the Pho mobile truck. All right. Any other thoughts? Yeah, I know we can't go into spoilers. This is also the longest episode ever by a long shot.
And by longest episode ever, you mean longest episode until we do Star Wars.
Well, what I'm saying is that this episode is almost the length of the new Star Trek film.
Holy cow.
And yet I always feel like I did cut us off around certain topics that we could have gone on for a long, long time.
Well, yeah, we had to do it to ourselves.
Definitely did.
Yeah.
We did it to ourselves because we wanted to get to the movie.
All right, last thoughts on Star Trek. Mine being Star Trek has a bright new future. I love this new direction. It's especially exciting to know that this kind of property has come back. And, you know, the box office is going to be great this weekend. The legs are going to be great because really, I'm going to be like, oh, it's Angels and Demons weekend. Oh, you mean Star Trek weekend? And it's Night at the Museum 2 weekend. Oh, you mean Star Trek weekend?
Well, also, given the fact that at least two people at this table are going to see it again, and Alex, you mentioned that you wanted to see it again.
Yeah, I want
to
see it on IMAX.
I'm sure you also want to see it and give them revenue for it too this time.
Yeah, because I saw it for free and I didn't see any of the trailer, so of course that's required.
And actually, could you please mention how you got it for free? We got it from Star Trek Movie Night at
the Giants baseball stadium. So they had Star Trek Movie Night at the AT&T Park. It was Giants versus Dodgers, and the Giants won, as they should. And they gave away these orange and black foam fingers shaped in
live
long and prosper hand gesture. And I should have brought mine today. I'm not that smart.
That was my sole reason. I was saying like, oh, let's go.
Although you did somewhat fulfill a lifelong dream of seeing outfielders run into each other.
Oh, that's true.
And I'll also say that when you do watch this movie, and I'm saying when, not if, make sure not to sit close to the screen.
Shaky cam is evil.
And also very, very, very close up in your face action. That you will not be able to tell what the hell is going on unless you're sitting further back.
I sat pretty close and it was all right. We sat like,
I think it's
because
we were on
back.
Oh, well, you're on IMAX too, right? Yeah.
He was at the same IMAX as us. He went to the Metreon.
Oh, that's right. Wow, this is an all Metreon IMAX table.
Well, you just kind of lean your head forward and then everything, you're in the middle of the action.
It is all around you.
So yeah, I mean, yeah. Also, for your first time watching this movie, don't sweat the little things. Because there's plenty of time to sweat the little things.
Yeah, go into a movie expecting to see it again, because after you see it, you will want to see it again.
What's sweat the little things mean?
Don't worry about the little things. Like, oh no, they did this wrong. Or, I missed that. Don't worry about missing something. Because this movie is made by a Star Trek fan for fans, and, you know, they care about the franchise, and they'll stick little things in there so that you can go back and go, hey, that's right. That did, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yes, that's
my thought on this is they now have a good thing going. Don't screw this up now.
Oh, you know what they're going to do. They got to do Khan. They do Khan. That's like, you know, the Joker, the Dark Knight. Oh, my God. You know, who would be Khan? Who will be Khan?
Enrique Iglesias.
They're going to dig up Ricardo Montalban.
He's really the only one who can play the role.
Yeah, they're going to have the CG Ricardo Montalban.
Are they going to have... No, I'm not going to talk about that. That's a spoiler thing. Okay, so that is the end of the episode for Star Trek, the longest episode of S-Words podcast history.
And we can still go into more Star Trek is the thing.
We're
going to continue talking about Star Trek after we finish this.
Once we get to the Star Wars episode, we're going to go to the longest episode ever, right?
Even if it's just Kevin quoting the movies from a script.
Me at the end.
I'll be right there with them.
You guys all left to be like, yeah, and there's also, you know, Figure and Dan's band, and there's Doik Natus and Tech and Tedden and Ichabel, and those are the five main ones. And then there's always like a sixth and seventh one.
Dianogue is spelled with one G. Duh.
And this is after you've quoted all three of the entire script of all three of the first movies.
S-words reenactment.
I'm not that good, okay? But I would want to print out the script, and then we could just,
I'll do that with you.
Okay. Mike and I are for sure in Star Wars.
I think the only movie that I can quote verbatim is The Princess Bride, so I wouldn't be able to do that one.
You mean you can't quote Holy Grail?
I can quote most of the Holy Grail, but I don't have all of it right.
All right, so that wraps up the Star Trek episode. If you want to send us any questions, comments, emails, I'm sure there's going to be some Star Trek fans that are going to write hate mail to me, although I do like Star Trek, and there's going to be some people that are going to correct us because we get things wrong every once in a while.
And because Star Trek fans are some of the most nitpicky, given that there's an entire book called The Nitpicker's Guide to Star Trek.
It's because a wizard
actually,
did it.
Actually, I think there's more than one.
There's more than one, that's right.
Wow, there's a volume two? Anyways,
no, there's a couple, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so you can email us at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. Check out all of our past episodes, the upcoming schedule, profiles about us, and some other stuff, I don't know, at www.s-words-podcast.com. There's also twitter.com/s_words. What is that, Dom?
That's where I just unload my brain.
Okay, and it also, I always forget to mention this, there are links to the new posts of episodes as well in there, too. That pretty much wraps up the episode. Those of you that have been clamoring for the pins, they are coming. I'm going to finish the designs this weekend. Those of you that have been leaving iTunes reviews, thank you very, very much. And please don't, you know, hesitate if you feel like you should add another 5-star review, because we will very much enjoy it.
Yes, we will.
All right. That is the end of this episode. We are doing something new, although I guess we could just do a quote sound off this time, because all of us will actually have quotes.
Yes.
So choose between whether you want to give a shout-out or do a quote.
Since my quote sound-off was number 3 of my list of top favorite Star Trek moments, I'll give a shout-out to my favorite new group, which is Meg and Dia. They have a new album out called Here, Here, and Here. They're two sisters that are actually half Korean, which I'm Korean, so I like. And they're female leads that really know how to rock. And so, yeah, that's my shout out.
Fascinating.
Would you please to tell me where are the nuclear vessels?
They're in Alameda. I live next to them.
Darmok and Jalad on the ocean.
And yet I cannot believe this didn't come out in this entire episode, but we're going to do it now.
Khan.com with 3 A's. That's my new shout out.
Let's go to the usual question we like to usually ask each other. What is the topic of the week? The topic of the week is Star Trek. And let's go into the usual question we like to ask ourselves.
It makes me feel like a moron.